Welcome to the Mission Critical Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Hebert, creator of the Mission Critical Coaching System, where we take a unique, holistically based approach to your personal growth. We examine all aspects of your life and leadership and engage your heart and mind so you can unlock your full potential to be, do, and have it all. On this episode, we take a look at the power of personal choice and what you can do to build a life of legacy. Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. I am Justin Hebert, and this is the Mission Critical Leadership Podcast, and I am so excited to have you back for episode 6. It is Easter week. It is spring break week. My kids are off enjoying that, and I hope that wherever you are and whatever you are doing, you are finding time today to choose joy and gratitude. And it is in that vein, in that idea, that I wanted to talk today about this idea of personal choice. And one of my favorite stories for this, actually, my brother came across this story quite a number of years ago, and it has been really a revolutionary idea and understanding for me about the power of personal choice that we have, that, you know, even sometimes in the midst of making those decisions that maybe we don't always see the benefit, maybe we don't always see the end game, maybe we always can't predict or see the right result, and yet those personal choices and action plans matter. So, this story. I grew up on a farm in Kansas. We have like this old farmhouse. It was a two-bedroom, one-bath, tiny little thing on some acreage. And my parents purchased a second home and actually transported that second home to our homestead and connected the two. So we, like, through this big, long renovation process, started to connect these two houses. And so we went from like this two-bedroom, one-bath to like this six-bedroom, two-bath, and then added a basement. And along the way, and then some of those renovations, as kind of was customary on those old historic Midwestern farmhouses, you know, we were doing some work and replacing like the old plaster walls and putting up drywall, and we would start to notice that they had stuffed the walls with just whatever they could find. And so actually, like, my bedroom growing up, when we remodeled it, it was stuffed with like old newspapers and old kids' shoes, right? And just kind of period pieces from when the house was built to try to help provide some insulation. And so, you know, we're renovating these houses. And as we do that, and as, you know, time goes by and life goes on, my parents obviously getting older, which meant their parents were getting older, and so saw grandparents and older relatives die, and you start to inherit some of their stuff, and began to get this interest in personal family history, right? Why is it that I am this Midwestern farm kid in the middle of nowhere, Kansas? Who have I come from? Who are the people that were here before me? Why does my life connect to this story at all? And one of the stories that we uncovered was of my great-great-grandfather. And actually, January of 2020, right before kind of the world shut down because of the pandemic, my last grandparent, my grandfather, my dad's dad, passed away, and I flew back to Kansas for the funeral. I mean, literally weeks before we knew that COVID existed, right? And I actually got to see some of like my ancient families, my great-great-grandfather's farmstead, and kind of the original buildings and the church that he was a part of in the 1860s. The church that he was a part of in the 1860s has his name engraved on it and got to spend time at his gravesite and my great-grandfather's, my grandfather's. And but this story, so like there's this history, this story, right? So in one sense, I can go to this monument in the middle of nowhere, Kansas, and see my great-great-grandfather's name from the 1865 immigration from Russia. And I find that stuff really cool, and it just piques my interest of, well, how is it that I get here? And how does this all relate to personal choice? Well, here is the story. So we've done these farmhouse renovations. My grandparents are passing away. We are starting to collect this family memorabilia, and we come across this picture of my great-great-grandfather. And as it turns out, he was a part of this church that he helped build in the 1860s. Was part of a faith tradition, religious belief called the Holdermans. And they're, if you are aware at all of what Amish are, they're very closely related to the Amish. And at the time, it was customary that kids did not get an education past the eighth grade. That after that, your history would have dictated that your skills, your work, your labor were just needed on the farm. And so you could go get an eighth grade education, and then you were back on the farm and expected to start working. And my great-great-grandfather in this new country of America realized that, but the changing tides and landscapes of life in this new country. And he said, I want my kids to go past the eighth grade. And the church went to him and said, we don't support that. If you continue down this path and continue to insist that your kids go to school past the eighth grade, we will black sheep you. We will kick you out of the church. And this is a guy who helped build the church. His name is on the cornerstone of the building. But we think it's wrong, and we will kick you out. And he wrestled with it, and he prayed over this decision and decided, you know, the right thing is for my kids to go to school past the eighth grade. And so they did. And my grandfather, as this story continues, ends up graduating high school, and he's the first one in our family to graduate high school. And my father, after high school, goes and gets a vocational technical degree and graduates from a 2-year university post high school. And both my brother and I hold not just a college degree, not just a master's degree, but we both have terminal doctoral degrees. If you don't know that story and you just look at me and you look at my brother and you say, oh, a couple of kids with doctoral education, you know, maybe that's nice. That story, the ability for my brother and I to be in the position to get doctoral degrees was not made when we went and enrolled in doctoral school. The decision, the ability for my brother and I to get doctoral degrees happened in the 1860s when my great-great-grandfather decided to stand up against an action that he thought was wrong, a rule that he did not think needed to be followed, a change in life and habits and a reading of where culture and the world was at and what his kids would need to be successful well beyond his years. And when he stood up and defiantly, even in the face of opposition, even in the face of persecution, even in the face of ridicule and exile, chose to enroll his kids in an eighth grade education. Now, the funny thing, I mentioned in January of 2020, I went back for my grandfather's funeral. There are still, I found this out when I went back there a couple of years ago, there are still branches of our family that don't talk to each other. And when you ask why, it goes back to that decision. No one really remembers the actual conflict. Obviously, none of those people are still alive. They have just grown up in the shadow of these choices. And for some, the decision to pursue education and set their kids up for a better life has had long-lasting ramifications, not just in their continued family genealogy of something I have benefited from, but even the family dynamics. It has continued to be this sour spot where certain cousins don't talk to each other because you're part of this branch that got kicked out, and so we have been shunning you since the 1860s, and we will continue to shun you. But I'm reminded, in the midst of all of this, about the power for personal choice. My great-great-grandfather could not have predicted that his kids would get eighth grade educations and be the first to get a taste of eighth grade high school life, and that his grandson would be the first to graduate high school, and that his great-grandson would go on to get a college degree, and that his great-great-grandsons would go on to become doctors. He wasn't thinking that. He wasn't planning that out. That wasn't part of the strategy. That wasn't part of what he journaled about. It was just this moral declaration of this is what is right, and I'm going to do it, no matter the cost. And that is where mission-critical leaders need to live, that they are able to see what is it that is going on around them. What are the bold, decisive decisions that need to be made? And I can stick by those, and I can be motivated by those convictions, and I can be a habitual person of discipline that even in the face of opposition, even in the face of exclusion, even in the face of ridicule, even in the face of being mocked and persecuted, I just know that this is right, and I will hold to this and not play the short game, but look to the long-term potential of the decisions that I make. Part of what we do when we talk about legacy in the coaching system is we say, what are the implications that you want to have on your family for future generations? And this is why we feel like we need to ask that question. That 80, 90, 100 years old, whenever you write out your death plan, and we actually write that out, when you are 90 and sitting on your rocking chair on your front porch with your spouse, watching the sunset, what do you want your life to look like? What do you want to have accomplished? Those are activities that we actively engage in the coaching process, because that's how we build that life. But when you are sitting on that rocking chair at 90 years old in the twilight years of life, what are the things you want to have accomplished, not just in your life, but what is the future trajectory and shape that you want to have accomplished for future generations? See, one of the great dangers for mission-critical leaders and one of the things they have to watch out for is complacency. And I think we miss that sometimes. You see, far too often we might think, well, these people are high performers, they're high achievers, they don't naturally settle. So where's the tendency for complacency? And it is precisely in the fact that they hit that a certain level of achievement and then think that they've made it and they stop. But the reality is, if you're mediocre, it means you're average. So you're just average to those around you. And so if you are a mediocre CEO, then you just become an average CEO. And mission-critical leaders never settle for average. Mission-critical leaders always are striving for that next great growth opportunity, because they realize that as they continue to grow, they can continue to impact and influence others around them. So the danger in mediocrity is not that you just become average of all people, you'll become the average of your category, and even that presents a danger, because if you're average, it means you're stagnant. You have plateaued. And mission-critical leaders never plateau. So part of what we do is that end-of-life reflection to say at 90, in those twilight years, in the rocking chair, sitting on your front porch, what do you want to have accomplished? Because if that is what you want to accomplish, then what do you need to do today, tomorrow, this week to start that journey? And part of that, the ultimate end goal of that, is to realize that legacy means you continue to be talked about, written about, shared about, joyously celebrated even after you're gone. Your legacy does not stop when you die. Your legacy continues forward. So when in the coaching context we talk about this idea of leaving a legacy of influence and impact, it is that sort of story. What do you want your kids to share with their kids about, hey, my dad was this type of person. My mom was this amazing lady. Let me tell you about her. And if you're lucky enough, you'll get to be around for some of those grandkid conversations. You can influence your grandkids. And a few of us will get to celebrate with our great-grandkids. But what about your great-great-grandkids? I never met that extended far back portion of my family, but I am directly influenced and shaped by the choices they made, even if I'm not aware of it. And so I can continue that great family legacy by making the same sorts of bold, decisive decisions and leading with integrity that my great-great-grandfather did, that my great-grandfather did, that my grandfather did, that my father has done. I can do that. I can model it forward for my kids and grandkids and great-grandkids and great-great-grandkids so that that story continues to get told 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 generations down the line. This is what good, solid, healthy leadership and influence looks like. That if we do this right, if we are clear about our values, if we understand our purpose, if we live into our calling, if we practice areas of health in the internal dynamics of mental, physical, emotional, spiritual aspects, that if we have healthy outworkings into our relationships and into our finances, we can continue to expand upon that legacy. See, one of the great things that we need to realize that is within our power every single day is the power of personal choice. I can this day choose to be who I want to be and choose the story that I want to live in and choose what values and characteristics and habits and mindsets I pass on to those around me so that I can continue to influence and impact future generations. For many of us, my guess is most of us, that probably looks like our family, right? We care most about those within the four walls of our own home. But for many of us, that also means the employees we surround ourselves with or the other members of our team, whatever that looks like, our religious group, our civic groups, the way we like to give back, the nonprofits we support. We can continue to show up in real and raw and authentic ways and empower those around us to rewrite their own story, to accept their own personal choices, to start afresh. No matter where they're at on their own journey, they have the option of starting over with their own power of personal choice and becoming the person that leaves the legacy that continues to get talked about. I recently finished a biography on John Adams, the second president of the United States, and I'm working my way through presidential biographies. I think I've mentioned that before on previous episodes. And there's this interesting moment in this latest biography where they said even as everything fell apart around John Adams, that as he was getting up in age, he was in his late 80s and early 90s, and his health had started to decline. He said he lost more and more things. He lost his wife. He had lost kids. He lost his political influence. He lost his ability to ride horses, right? Like all of these things that he enjoyed about life were continuing to be taken from him as his health started to fail as he got advanced in years. And in the book, they said it. And yet, even as these things were taken from him, if you looked at what really mattered to him, he was a person of immense joy. At 90, nearly blind, nearly deaf, in great physical pain, separated from his wife and kids through death, losing his ability to farm and ride horses and many of the activities that he had regularly participated in throughout his life, he was still a person of deep joy. Why? Well, I think in part it is because he was clear on the legacy he was trying to leave. He got to see his son nominated and then win a presidential election. and he got to continue to write, however feebly and slow, to his grandkids, and he began to pass on some of these leadership lessons to future generations and shape who they were becoming. And ultimately, that one of his great joys was continuing to influence those around him. That he could tell in his twilight years, as his life was wrapping up, that he still had the capacity to those that were still around and still the closest to him to make their life better. And so at 90 years old, he made that commitment. Many of us need to make that same choice, not when we're 90, but here today, that we can get consumed by the bad news on the television and in the newspaper. We can become angry or fearful at what we see posted on social media, that we can become indecisive or fret about some of the choices that we have to make. And yet in the midst of each and every one of those, we can choose what we will do. We can choose the story we want to live. I can practice that fear in front of my kids and teach them to be people that should be afraid of the bad news that they see on TV. Or I can interact with them and say, there is some bad stuff out there, but here is what we can do to make the world a better place. Here are the gifts that you have. Here are the things that you can do. Here are the places that you can interact with. Here are the people that you can help. Here are those around you that you can serve and love and give back to. And if you choose to do that, the bad news isn't quite so bad. That through the power of personal choice, you have the ability to give back, to own your personal narrative, to share the things that you want to share in the world, to own your values and be a person that blesses those around you. And my hope, my prayer for you this week is that you do that. May you be a mission critical leader focused on the here and now, with an eye towards future longevity. It does no good to be healthy now and burn out in the future. I want you to be healthy now and into the future, that at 90 in your twilight years on the rocking chair, you have a legacy that you are pleased with. One that your kids, your grandkids, your great-grandkids, and your great-great-grandkids will pass on. This is the type of man, this is the type of woman that they were, and our family story has changed because of it. You have that power. More than that, you have the obligation and responsibility. Live into your legacy.